Accession number 19656, Reel 4.
And Hammond, Reel 4.
Five ships remaining seaworthy after the Battle of the Java Sea were the Dragon, Danae, Scout, Tenedos, and the Hobart. And we were ordered to proceed towards Singapore, and if we hadn't encountered the enemy by dawn, to retire through the Sunda Strait and make towards Colombo. In the event when dawn broke, there was absolutely nothing in sight. And where I think all of us had anticipated being in action, and the inevitable result against a power more superior to ourselves. I think we all breathed a sigh of relief. I know. Anyway, we retired through the Sunda Strait and proceeded towards Colombo. And on the way, we were ordered into Padang, into Padang. And this is a port on the Sumatra side, the Indian Ocean. We were told to oil and water, and there might be some survivors. We approached the port and entered it after a little hesitancy, because everything looked a bit dubious. In any case, we went alongside, and before we knew where we were, there was a big fat Dutchman running down the quay, and he buttoned our oil hoses on and the water hose, and then people appeared from nowhere. It became, I think we were the last sort of ship to leave the place. The Japanese were about 12 miles away at the time. We embarked all we could. I don't think we left anybody behind anyway. I'm sure we didn't. But it was standing room only. There were nurses, there were airmen, there were sailors, there were army, there was Chinese, there were all people that had trekked right across Sumatra to this last evacuation port. We rendezvoused the Hobart in the Indian Ocean, 100 miles out, and went alongside and disembarked them. I think we crushed the motorboat, and there's a few rails went, but nothing of any great importance. I mean, material things didn't matter that time. And then we all set course for Colombo. which place we eventually arrived at quite safely. We went to Walker's dock where the ship was going to be fitted out, and we were fitted out with new Ehrlichans and goodness knows what there. But Easter Sunday 1942, about 11 o'clock, all hell broke loose as waves of Japanese planes came over, and there was a very intensive raid. The Tenedos was hit, and she broke her back. Her bow stayed afloat, her stern was underwater. The 2-pounder gun, I think, was blown about 2.25 miles away as their after magazine had blown up. We lost about 20 men, including, it was most unfortunate, I think, really, when you think about history and whatever. There was an actress in England, very famous actress, called Beatrice Lilly at the time. And she was actually Lady Peel, I think, goes from the old days of Peel, the policeman, goodness knows what. And his son, Robert, he was a Sir Robert, was an ordinary seaman who had just joined Tenedos the day before, but he was a white paper candidate. A white paper candidate is a chap who has to do a certain amount of sea time, then he more or less goes to Lansing or wherever they went, and he's given the commission in the RNVR. That was the training period. And he joined the ship 24 hours before. And I was added, unfortunately, in the watch and quarter bill, detailed him off in the after ammunition supply, so he was down the magazine when the bomb hit. So that was that.
So he was killed?
He was killed. He was killed, poor lad. 19-year-old, there you go. I think he was 19, 20, whatever. Just a youngster.
What do you personally remember of the attack on the Tenedos?
Eh?
What do you personally remember of the attack on the Tenedos?
being on the bridge and watching the aircraft and seeing the bombs come down.
Was there anything you could do?
No, nothing. Nothing to do. Well, I mean, obviously we were firing with our new Ehrlichan, but nothing you could do about it. You're a sitting duck, aren't you?
You're at anchor.
Oh, we were stern to, tied to the wharf, stern to, tied to the wharf being repaired, getting our new bits and pieces. Do nothing.
How frightening was it?
Very. Very frightening.
Were you injured at all yourself?
Not really, no. Hurt my right ankle, but that's about all. Suffered a bit since afterward, but no problem. But I didn't, So that was that. I stayed on board with about 8 men. The rest were taken off. The captain was injured in the hospital. The gunner nearly had his arm taken off. The only piece of glass we had on the bridge was covered the small chart table. And of course that shattered and nearly took half his arm off. And I went up in the air a bit, and that was it. I was lucky, very lucky. And that was that. Anyway, I stayed on board for another couple of days, and it was quite horrible, really, because the ship, you could hear it, well, it was sinking. I mean, you hear the water dripping into the forward compartments. Anyway, that night, the first night, I'd left the bridge. Now, I was in the TS below the bridge, and the sentry came to me and he said, that boat's approached twice, sir. He said, I think it's a looter. I said, oh, is it? And I think I was a bit bomb happy because I said, oh, I'll fix him. Anyway, I went out and saw this boat coming and I picked my revolver up and shot at it. Don't know whether I hit him or not. I think I might have done. But anyway, he didn't come back.
Do you think it was a looter?
I know it was. I killed the bugger.
How did you know it was a looter?
Well, I wasn't sure, but he shouldn't have been there, should he? 3 o'clock in the morning. Just as our bodies were coming up to the surface and goodness knows what. Oh no. Anyway, that was that. So the captain in charge, Ceylon, sent for me and he said, well, you've been the Far East long enough, I think, young man, send you home. He said, but first, why don't you do a job for us? I said, all right. So me and another lieutenant and I think that's better English, isn't it? Me and honestly. Were given the two bags of codes and we were to act as couriers as far as Madras. So we get on the train at Colombo with these two bags of codes. We've got one revolver between us and I think one bottle of whiskey between us. So you get to Danish Cody and you go across in the ferry to a place called Talmanar. And you pick up the train, Talmanar. We're bound for Bombay via Madras. This is the Indian trains at those days. That time it was a bit dangerous because, I mean, the Indians were not over-friendly and they were stopping trains and pulling people off and cutting their throats, weren't they? Anyway. But every now and again, of course, the train stops and it's the old Indian custom, and you're given a very nice sort of very food on the way sort of thing. Anyway, the train stops, and this other lieutenant said, oh, there's some other passengers about three compartments behind. They were nurses. Nurses that I'd saved from Padang. He said, I'm just going to give the nurses a drink. So he takes out one bottle of whiskey, goes down three compartments, speaks to the girls in the compartment, gives them a drink, and he's on his way back. And the train starts. What does he do? Runs, gets to our compartment, and drops our bottle of whiskey. And it breaks into a thousand pieces. Tragedy. Anyway, we get to Madras. We hand the books of bags of codes to the courier there, another naval attaché, I think, for the the general who was fighting in Burma at the time. I think it was Alexander, wasn't it? Yeah, I think was it him or Lusa or Slim or not Slim? One, Wavell. It was Wavell then, wasn't it? Yes, it was in charge.
Had you had any trouble from Indians on the way?
No problem at all. Anyway, we get to Bombay, billeted in the famous hotel there. I forget what it was.
Taj Mahal.
Yeah, and they tried to keep me there. I don't know why. And they wanted me to stay and join the RIN, but because they were very short. But I'd had enough of the Far East. I wanted to be her. Anyway, Duchess of Richmond, troop ship. So I joined this troop ship there and off we go to England. There was all the survivors from the Cornwall aboard, and there was quite a lot of, people. Not a lot of passengers. It wasn't full by any means. So anyway, Cape Town, eventually on to Freetown. Freetown, right across the Atlantic to Newfoundland, where we load a full division of Canadian troops. There was one Wren on board. One Wren in the whole of crowd. But she was very much in demand. Anyway, we eventually arrived quite safely. We came back unescorted right across the Atlantic. And eventually arrived in Liverpool.
What did you do for the rest of the war then?
Ha! What did I do for the rest of the war? Went home first. Then went down to London. I met, who was that captain? Oh, that was a very nice chap. He was the captain of the Cornwall. I met him in Gives. I was getting a new uniform.
Doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. Anyway, so the next thing, of course, that happens is they send me to Campbelltown, where I do an anti-submarine course. And from there, I was appointed to a corvette called the Anchusa. A spare CO, not captain, as a spare CO, somebody to learn the Atlantic convoy business.
Is this a flower class
corvette? A flower class corvette. And then we go across to Argentia with a convoy, bring another one back. No problems, no action with B1 escort group. And then another trip with the Anchusa, another trip back. And on the trip back, I think we were in a bit of a problem. We had a problem with the an attack that was going to develop. But these people at Admiralty warned us that they were homing onto us. And in that case, I mean, he was quite good. A chap called Baildums, the escort commander. We all dropped back and we dropped one charge attached to a 40-gallon oil drum, which was perforated by putting, you know, just a few holes in, so they sank slowly, because these half a dozen U-boats were following up from astern to attack. And we altered course 45 degrees. And, I mean, we were about 10 miles away. We could hear our depth charges, which we'd dropped delayed action, going off right, left and centre. Anyway, we got clear away. We didn't lose the ship. I thought that was very clever. Anyway, that was that. So I was taken off the ship at after that voyage. But I had, at that time, planned, or I'd seen quite a lot of things that could improve the reloading of the depth charges and whatever, and I'd put it all in writing and I'd sent the whole report off, and I was very pleased with that. I think it came out in the drill afterwards anyway. But that was that. But then, of course, America was well in the war, or going to be well in the war, and they were building ships right, left and centre in the States. So I was sent across to America with a full crew, as a first lieutenant, not in command, to commission the very first of the captain class frigates in Boston, which we did. And we commissioned her.
What ship was this?
The Bainton. The Bainton. But she was the first of the class, and there were a lot of faults in a way with her. I mean, she was bottom heavy. In fact, she could roll 48 degrees and back in 7 seconds. I mean, she was no damn good for gunnery at all. But she had all the modern bits. She had Hedgehog, she had wonderful radar, she had 3 anti-perv, you know, 3-inch, they were 3-inch guns, they were very good. 2 depth charge throwers each side, and racks. They were purposely built for anti-submarine warfare or escort, whatever. Nice little ships they were. Anyway, we went to Bermuda first, and then I think we worked up a little bit there, and then came to back home, bringing, I think, some special rockets that called Sanders Patent, that some brilliant young chap had devised for shooting from aircraft into submarines. Anyway, that was that. We were duly inspected by the Admiral in Liverpool, and he thought the ships were quite good. And I did. What was to happen next? Yeah, we went back. Yeah. This is quite interesting, really. We were escorting convoy ONS 11. Remember that? Quite right. Well. And we were starboard wing, 2,000 yards, mid-Atlantic. Calmish, but misty weather. And I went on the bridge. I wasn't on watch. I went on the bridge. I just happened to go on the bridge. Just the weather to pick a submarine up. And between us and the convoy, this submarine surfaced. Well, God bless my soul. We got one shot up at him. Put the black flag up, of course, and enemy in sight, and rid all the rigmarole and whatever, and full speed ahead, and whatever. Stand by to ram and all the nonsense. But he dived. And anyway, he's down, and we're on top of him. And we drop 120 depth charges on him in 10 charge patterns. We got confirmation eventually of not a kill, but a possible. But we got a bit damaged on the way because one of our depth charges had gone off a bit prematurely and damaged the rudder and propellers. So we went back into Boston Navy Yard for that. And we're repaired there.
This is the Bainton?
That's the Bainton. Was it? Oh, yeah, and then we came back with another convoy. And the captain then was a man called Gwyn Jones. I think it was, yes, it was Gwyn Jones. And this is a bit serious, really, a thing to say, I don't know. His personalities, in a way. Gwyn Jones. Anyway, at 4 o'clock in the morning, we're... it's when we had those Sanders Patent things on board. It was very special. That was half his reason. Anyway, I went on the bridge, and the officer of the watch said to me, he said, I reported the captain. He said, we passed some lights, he said, in the water about half an hour ago. He said, I think it was some survivors. He said, I think the ship's been sunk there. He said, carry on, carry on, carry on. So, you know, I'm a sailor. I mean, you don't like leaving people to drown. So I rang down and I said, did the officer of the watch report these lights? He said, yes. I asked, are you going to do anything about it? He said, no. He said, carry on. So I said, oh, well, Lord's the Lord, you've got to carry on. But it changed that crew, that did. It changed the crew. They had no confidence in him. And, of course, we went to that famous place, Tobermory, after that voyage. You've probably heard about Tobermory, have you? The great admiral there, Monkey Stevenson. Anyway. On one of his staff, the lieutenant, ex-China Nav, who I knew. Of course, I mean,